Banshee, friend diagnostic.
You got it!
Ow!
Sorry about that. I didn't mean to
hurt you.
Badgie, what the hell?
Oh, guess I'm just a stupid, worthless blimp!
Badgie?
Computer, re-engage safety protocols.
Safety protocols are unavailable.
Get off me! He's corrupted!
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton going to the choo-choo party.
And we're here this week to talk about episode 6 of Lower Decks, Terminal Provocations. We are over the halfway point. We are in the downhill slope of Star Trek Lower Decks.
Well, that's worth a party then. I call it a choo-choo party, Cam.
Yeah, they really built up that choo-choo joke.
What does that choo-choo party entail? Is it better or worse than, say, Jadzia's Bachelorette? Or, say, you know, the party that we saw in Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad in Star Trek Discovery? How do you rate the choo-choo party amongst all those that we've seen come before on Star Trek?
Ooh, that is an excellent question. I feel like the choo-choo party would have a better chance at ranking somewhat highly if I'd seen something of it. I mean, I saw some people doing, you know, the choo-choo train, but that was about it. Everything else was just from the point of view of what the character, we were just seeing the characters react to it. So I have to place it below.
I think that's genius on the part of the writers, though, because all we have is our own imagination. Otherwise, we have characters screaming, wailing about how awesome it is.
Very true. Yeah. I thought this worked, but when you're asking me to rank it up against all timers, like, you know, Jadzia's bachelorette party and stuff, I mean, come on. That's a lot of competition.
Well, I guess I'm going to go on Etsy and cancel the choo-choo shirt that I bought you, if that's the case. I did like the fact that they got, reference to the Zebulon sisters, Zebulon sisters. And mm-hmm. I'm like, what is Star Trek's obsession with siblings serving together on starships? We got the Delaney sisters from Star Trek Voyager, who I think all the talk that we heard from Tom and Harry, I think we only ever saw them once, and it was like in season 7 or something.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they were teased out. In fact, it's something where I wonder if it would have been funnier if we just never saw them.
Well, it was also weird. Like, weren't the sisters, when we finally saw them, like, they looked like they're in their early 20s. So it's like, were they, like, hanging out in the Maquis as teenagers and then started, you know, going on dates in the holodeck with Tom and Harry? I don't know. It always kind of weirded me out.
I mean, yeah, okay. So it's like, and Harry's a very young man. You're like, okay, I guess. But, like, Tom Paris, years older there. Tom's got some splaining to do.
Kind of like in that episode, Birthright, and we did the math on Worf's half-Romulan girlfriend, and I remember our guest on that show was my sister, Geneva, and the three of us kind of looked at each other, and we're like, how old is this woman supposed to be?
And didn't we figure she was like 18 or something?
No, it's like 14.
14, oh, good yeah. Lord.
But, I mean, look at Alexander. By the time he was 8, he had the body of a 15-year-old.
Sure. So, yeah, that's a Klingon thing. I don't know that the Delaney sisters had that going, though. I mean,
maybe it was weird. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, Cam.
Let's party. Move on to a safer subject.
Choo-choo party aside, I like this one. It was interesting in that there are like three stories going on simultaneously. Bridge crew, Boimler and Mariner, Tendi and Rutherford, and you know, I was able to follow everything all at the same time. They all seem to kind of work for me. I got laughs out of all three of the stories. I think this is probably like one of the most balanced episodes that we've gotten so far, and maybe a little bit later on some of the laughs, but there's still a couple moments that really got me. I'm looking at you, Badgie, but what do you think initially on this episode 6 here?
Well, I agree with you. Like, this was a very balanced episode, which I appreciated coming off of last week's, that we're going to continue that trend of stories not feeling rushed and worn out by the time they're over. I I struggled with this one a little bit. Like, I didn't find it that entertaining to watch this one. And actually, Badgie's a big part of it. But we also have this other character of Fletcher. And to me, both Badgie and Fletcher were kind of just like getting too much of the same kind of thing. It was these two like kind of aggressive and kind of unpleasant characters to hang out with, you know, bombarding the screen and yelling a lot. And the first time through, I thought, okay, you know what? Like, let me rewatch this and maybe I'm just being unfair. And even the second time, I was like, yeah, this isn't really working so much for me.
Well, for me, I look at Fletcher and I'm just like, oh, it's the first time that you're actually depicting like a true idiot in Starfleet. We've had like some less than exemplar sort of Starfleet officers, but no one who's an idiot quite like this.
I guess just what, Kelby in Enterprise?
But was he as, well, actually that's a pretty good example. It'd be amazing if there was like a Kelby poster inside of Fletcher's little cubicle that he sleeps in there, or not cubicle, bunk bed.
Right. Yeah. I'm trying to think. I mean, the show would say like, oh, you know, Barkley was an unconventional, but he's a genius character. Like he's a very bright character. It's, his issues are more social. I'm trying to
think of
someone.
Well, he's not an idiot.
No, he's definitely not an idiot.
I'm just talking about a pure idiot. And I think this, I think Fletcher, I just think back to the episode in which Wesley tries to get into Starfleet and he's not qualified just yet. Yeah. Whereas you've got like people like Fletcher going in. I'm just like, wow, the Dominion War must have really wiped out the ranks if they're letting somebody like Fletcher in.
Very true. Actually, in that episode, The Good Shepherd on Voyager, wasn't one of them like a hopeless case?
I think it's more, the three of them depicted, they're more just very insular. Like, and they were all kind of talented in their own way, but just not to the point where they've ever bothered to go on a on an away mission by the time that Janeway figured it out.
I felt like one of them was like a lost cause. Two of them were like fine and actually succeeded in the line of duty, but like one of them was a lost cause or something. But my memory's not strong enough at the moment.
I could be mistaken, but would Janeway actually end the episode like that and just be like, you're a lost cause?
She never said it to Chakotay at the end of an episode, so.
Okay. Yeah, you got it there.
So no, she wouldn't, yeah. I guess.
Fletcher wasn't really working for you. I know what you're talking about. It's kind of like how long can I just chuckle at his antics versus kind of get ruffled by his annoying demeanor. Badgie, I did enjoy the Badgie stuff, although I was a little confused as to why the elements, whether it's you know, cold weather or walking upstairs, why that would have any effect on Badgie. But I do like the one line that he had where he says, you can't hurt me, father, maybe with your disappointment, but not your fists. Like, that's like Star Trek daddy issues right there.
Yeah, it reminded me also of Ultron, more the comic book version than the movie version, which is all daddy issues all the time for the most part.
Yeah.
I thought it was very odd, though, that Badgie's like one of his final words was diplomatic immunity from Lethal Weapon 2.
that's a shout out right there, I suppose. But also his last word though is Badgie's here, and then it cuts to him going, Badgie's always here. You know, like doesn't look as if Rutherford quite worked out the kinks in this holodeck training program.
No, he did not, it would seem. Like, it's funny because I was actually 100% on board with Badgie when the character first showed up. I was like, this is genius. You know, it is the old was it Word document microclip or whatever? What was it? Not microclip. The paperclip.
Clippy.
I should say. Going futuristic. I'm calling it like the microclip. Yeah. Yeah. Clippy. And I thought that was a fun idea to see. And to me, like, the joke of this thing malfunctioning works. It's, I think, the fact that like when it goes into homicidal mode, we get like a lot of that. It's just kind of being very repetitive. It's just kind of saying the same things over and over again. And I was like, okay, like. I felt like we maybe could have done a little more because obviously this is riffing on so many of those holodeck characters gone, you know, amok episodes of TNG and Voyager and what have you. And I just felt like maybe we could have done something a little more, make it maybe a little more clever of how they defeat Badgie or something.
Well, if safety protocols are disabled once again, and I don't even know how that could be possible. Who designed the holodeck? Please, people, fix that issue there. But if they're malfunctioning once again, yeah, maybe you can do something a little different with that. But we haven't actually seen like a holodeck or a hologram kind of chase somebody down in a homicidal way aboard the holodeck, right?
Not like this, no. I'm racking my brain. No, I mean, usually it was characters that kind of had to outsmart, whether it's Moriarty or all of the, you know, evil characters in Our Man Bashir. They were very rarely turning into, like, Jason Voorhees.
Yeah, yeah. One thing that I did appreciate about that holodeck sequence, though, was at a certain point, Rutherford says, load Bajur and Marketplace, and mm-hmm. they get under, you know, the robes, because, of course, if you're not wearing a vest in Star Trek, then you're wearing a robe. But I'm kind of seizing on, like, what I kind of like within the way that they reference the universe. Load Bajur and Marketplace, that's working within the universe. It's playing within the universe rather than doing like random name drops, like Boimler at the start saying, this is what the Enterprise D engine sounds like. And it's like, it's those jokes where you're supposed to laugh because they reference the Enterprise D, or they reference Moriarty, or they name drop Q. And it's like, these things work for me better than like when we saw the Ferengi a couple weeks ago, you know. And it's not like you have to like beat it over the viewer's head what a Ferengi is or anything like that. That's the stuff that I enjoy more within the Star Trek Lower Decks kind of comedy business or world building, I should say.
Yeah, and you know what? One that actually kind of did work for me, even though it was just more references, was Rutherford throwing out the names of hanging out on the holodeck with Da Vinci and Moriarty, and he just started like this long, long list, which I actually thought was funny because it was such a long list that the franchise has obviously gone to so many times. Like, I felt like that was kind of the joke more so than just throwing out a single reference or two.
Who would be the historical figures that you would hang out with in the holodeck?
Oh, geez. I don't think there'd be many that I would particularly want to hang out with. I feel like I would have trouble relating to any of them, because obviously if I'm calling them up, they're
there's
probably like...
There's zero historical figures in the 10,000 years of human history that you could have any interest in just chilling with for an afternoon?
If you ask me, like, the personal answer, it's going to be probably like Alfred Hitchcock or something, like a classic filmmaker that I would want to talk to.
He's not a historical figure.
I know. Terms of historical figures, some of the artists like Leonardo da Vinci would be interesting. Although I may be ruined on that one after Voyager, but yeah. I'm going to assume he'd be a little different in person. It would be an artist or something. Maybe Shakespeare would be interesting as well.
Yeah.
It would be someone like that. I would be far less likely to want to go hang out with, say, I don't know, Winston Churchill or something.
Sure. Yeah. That historical figure got you there. I got to ask you this. When Fletcher confronted the Delta crew, and he said that Mariner's going to blank your blank off, it was all bleeped out. What required both those blanks, Cam?
Blank your blank off. Okay. I don't know, but it's obscene either way you go.
I've got something in my imagination. I dare not, spill the beans on, say, a family podcast. But it's like, that's kind of what I like about this show, is like, it's making you use your imagination to better effect than just like by saying it out loud, by being so explicit, though. Like, that's the stuff that kind of is working for me, like making us visualize what the choo-choo party might be, like make us figure out what bleep your bleep off might be. And it could be as innocuous or as dirty as you want to make it in your head.
Oh, yeah, I'm all in favor of the bleeping out profanity in this show. I think it's pretty consistently funny. It's one of those, I mean, it should be just a complete cliche to do at this point, because animated shows have been doing it forever, as well as, you know, any number of comedies or even older radio shows would do it all the time as like comedy. But it somehow always works.
Yeah. One other thing that we got to see changed things up a little bit was Boimler and Mariner, instead of fighting with each other, they were working with each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the two of them as like friends who bicker a lot. I think that's the best angle to take, because if we were to continue to have these characters behaving towards each other the way they were in like episode one or two, I think it would just get old. I like the idea of, you know, Star Trek is a hangout show, as we've said probably a billion times on this podcast, but what we haven't had really are friends who actually get under each other's skin and like kind of take jabs at each other. Like, you don't get a lot of that in Star Trek. They'll have characters like that, but their way of taking jabs at each other is so lame.
Is Odo and Quark, is that relationship the closest to what we've got with Mariner and Boimler?
It is, but also that's not really a friendship. Like, it's sort of a whole other type of relationship. It's antagonistic, and the two of them don't really bond together, whereas these two obviously have things in common. They do bond. You know, the fact that they, you know, that Boimler had made them matching choo-choo dance shirts, like, that's great. It's kind of taking that Bashir and O'Brien type of friendship, but adding a little bit of vinegar to it, which I really enjoy.
So if there are friends on other starships that I'm talking about throughout the all the different series, which crew is most likely to get together and make engine noises and compare their engine noises?
Geez. You see, it's funny. When I go to the other shows, I feel like the number of characters who would do that on the show, it's usually like confined to the engineer. Like, I could totally see Scotty doing that. But I'm going to say TNG, because I think if you have the trifecta of Geordi, Barclay, and Wesley, I could see the three of them doing that.
Okay. I was actually thinking that TNG would be least likely, because I was thinking, like, you know, Data, Geordi, and who? Like, Riker? Like, would they be willing to do that? Picard's not going to be doing that. I don't see Troy or Crusher. I just thought that there were fewer options there. I also think that the Deep Space Nine crew, a little too uptight at times, right?
A little preoccupied with things like, I don't know, war.
Yeah, yeah. That'd be great if instead of that rousing speech in the mess hall during the Dominion War, in which they had blasted out, burnt out all of those phase pulse beacons or whatever, it was just Sisko leading the charge on everybody doing engine noises.
Could you see, like, say, Tom and Harry doing that, or Trip and Reed?
Not Reed, but I can see Tom and Harry doing that, and then the Doctor joining in. But you're not going to get B'Elanna in on this. Maybe. There's some possibility about B'Elanna, but I think Seven would be more likely to do the engine noises than, say, B'Elanna would.
But Seven would do it, like, 100% accurately.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was a good gag. That's something that never would have occurred to me to do in Star Trek, which is just characters geeking out over the warp core noises.
Can you do your best warp core noise for me? Just 2 or 3 seconds tops.
I don't know. Sort of that low hum. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
It's a sort of noise that I become very familiar with, not just from watching Star Trek, but when I'm putting up clips in this podcast, you know, every week, whenever it's like older shows for the most part, that hum is very clear to me when I'm, you know, sitting there with headphones editing the episode and listening through that clip.
Well, there's like that 12-hour YouTube video, and all it is the Enterprise D engine on repeat, like just the sound of it for 12 hours straight. So it is obviously relaxing to some people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can totally see that. It's a fun idea, and that's the kind of comedy I'm liking on this show, is just tackling elements of the franchise that it's like we all take for granted and almost don't even reference. Like, you don't hear really people talking at conventions about the warp core sounds, but we all know it. And I like that they're not going to the safe bets of, like, let's talk about forehead ridges or something. It's like, let's tackle things that seem very obvious, but people don't really think to talk about.
Oh, like sex in the holodeck?
Everyone talks about that, especially at the Star Trek conventions.
No, that's just you and the two-person panel that you keep trying to pitch them, the organizers, every year, and there's just not that many takers.
Live, nude, and in the flesh.
Yeah. One of the things that I'm wondering about, though, is the tractor beam fight involving the antagonist of the week, voiced by J.G. Hertzler. That we always talk about, like, being able to recognize voices on this show. Did you recognize J.G. Hertzler's voice?
Okay. I guess, Yes, I did, but I also didn't see it quickly enough in the credits because, unfortunately, my Crave app on my TV, and here in Canada, we use Crave as opposed to CBS All Access. The second those credits pop up, it just shrinks on the screen. And by the time I'd like opened it back up and fast forward, I was just like, ah, the hell with it. I'll catch it on the rewatch. And so on the rewatch, I finally got confirmation. But yeah, it did pop out to me. But at the same time, I was like, I don't know. What are the odds he's the first voice actor from the, you know, classic Star Trek to show up on this show? That seems unlikely. It seems like they'd more have like a, you know, sound alike or just kind of your gruff alien type. But I was thrilled to see his name listed.
Yeah, I definitely recognized his voice upon hearing it, but it confused me because I was like, well, this is still the era of Martok. And mm-hmm. why does he sound exactly like Martok as well? Like, Gigi Hertzler's played many a different character throughout the different series. Why make him sound exactly like his most iconic character, one who is presumably still alive and kicking in 2380?
Right, because J.G. Hertzler has a number of characters, and he doesn't, I mean, his voice is very distinctive. So, like, yeah, he has that character who shows up in Tsunkatsi, that Voyager episode, but that's, like, way in the Delta Quadrant, and the chances of that interfering with the ongoing continuity of Lower Decks seems very slight. But if we were to get a Martok appearance, it might be kind of strange to have such a distinct voice coming out of this, you know, after out of Martok after seeing this character.
Yeah, do you think it's their way of telling us don't expect to hear from Martok?
I think that may be the case.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just wonder if Martok is a hard ask to put on that show for sort of more casual viewers. Like, I think that you're going to see legacy characters, but I wonder if it would be tough to do Martok in a way where you're honoring that character versus just kind of presenting him as your somewhat generic Klingon of the week because you don't want to confuse new viewers.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. But it's also like, if you're putting him into a comedy show, are you honoring the character or are you kind of making fun of the character for whatever reason?
Yeah, because on the show, the senior staff obviously are made to look ridiculous a lot. And we've yet to see a legacy character pop up on the show, but I am going to be really fascinated to see how they deal with them. Because it seems like everyone on the show gets a very comedic slant put on them. So, like, what is the case for if we get a George Takei cameo or we get, Jonathan Frakes or something?
Yeah, but I also think, like, some characters lend themselves better to appearing in a comedy series. And so, like you said, it'll be interesting to see which legacy characters do pop up and you know, I don't know if you can get away with return of, say, First Minister Shikar from Bajor.
Tyler, you're breaking my heart.
I'm just being honest, you know, so, but you know what, like, bring back Moriarty. They sure love referencing him enough.
Yeah, I mean, you've said in the past, it seems like Quark would be the most likely, and he does fit the comedy mode very well, and that's something that I don't think a lot of the other characters do. Like, you cannot bring, well, you could, and it would probably be funny, but it seems unlikely they bring, say, Patrick Stewart on as Picard and just kind of have a comedic scene where there's bumbling involved around him.
Do you think anybody would be upset if they brought Rom on and just did comedy beats with him?
No, that would be great. Yeah. I mean, that would be a case where at least if you are going to Ferenginar, for example, you could establish him as the leader, you know, of Ferenginar. And that's awesome for existing viewers who watch DS9 because they get it. But you don't need to explain that to a new viewer because, hey, it's the ruler of Ferenginar. You know,
yeah.
In one sentence, there it is.
I think that would be one that works and one that isn't really going to conflict with too much fan appreciation for the characters. You're still honoring the characters there. So I think that one works there. Did they ever explain why Badgy just kept succumbing to the elements? That beat kind of confused me.
That confused me as well. I mean, there's a lot of things going on the ship at that point in time with things malfunctioning. So I guess it was tied to one of those, like the tentacle beast or something, maybe?
Yeah, what did you think of that semi-sentient computer monster I guess Fletcher's brainwaves corrupted it with his own insecurities?
Right. Yes, that seemed to be the case. It was kind of an nth degree kind of thing, with Barkley plugging into the computer. Only
except
here
you
we
have
got
an idiot plugging into the computer.
Exactly, yes. In this case, I think the tentacle beast would have been more amusing if I hadn't seen this already on, you know, tentacles on Picard, tentacles on Discovery. In this case, I was like, boy, there's a lot of tentacle creatures in these Kurtzman shows. I did like the animation, though, and I will say this episode on an animation level was fantastic.
Yeah, no, I can't say that the that there's been an oversaturation of tentacles on my part that it drew me out of it. But yeah, speaking of the animation, there was even that one shot of, you know, Badgie punching Rutherford, and you even get like the blood effect on the lens of the so-called camera that would be filming the animation. So I think every week you and I are just remain like utterly impressed by the animation that's going on here.
Yeah, I mean, you can list off so many shots in this one. Just the tentacle beast alone was a fantastic animation. Yeah, the fist fight was well done. Even the spacewalk where we have Rutherford and Tendi just out floating around on the holodeck, I thought was really, really well animated. This show has not cheaped out when it comes to animation, which I was worried about. I thought it might be a little more static. You know, not like, you know, the original animated series static, but just like, you know, let's just keep it a little simpler because we want to crank these episodes out. But it really, you could see that they put in the time and effort.
I just haven't seen anything in the Kurtzman era that would lead me to believe that they would not, you know, throw as many dollars as they can at it. Like, even look at those short treks. They're pouring money into those as well. So, it does not surprise me that they go all out with the animation dollars too.
It really does seem like the Kurtzman era of Star Trek has like an unlimited bank account, doesn't it?
I for now, we'll see what the newly merged company wants to do. But the reason why you merge companies like this and you now have, you know, CBS Viacom, it's not because you want to spend less money. It's because you want to keep spending more. And look, they just keep announcing spinoffs. So, hey, let them have at it. Could you imagine getting these production values like back in the 90s for any show at the time?
No, I can't at all. I mean, part of what I love about the older Star Treks is the way they work with their limitations. I mean, the original series does marvelous things with the visuals on like a shoestring budget. So like, I'm happy with Star Trek existing in, you know, that form, or what they did with the world building of DS9 on a, you know, relatively small budget. But it is fun to see them doing to Star Trek on the, you know, on the small screen, what we saw in, say, like the J.J. Abrams Star Trek films, which is really blowing it up with a big budget. It's just a lot of fun to see. And I mean, we'll see if it goes back a different direction in the long-term future of Star Trek. But for now, I mean, it's been very exciting to see.
Well, you make me think of something that I think is really important with regards to the legacy of Star Trek. But you're right. They don't have these unlimited budgets. So what they're relying on, though, is writing a lot of scenes in which people talk a lot. And so you get a better sense of the characters. There's a lot of debate about kind of different philosophies going on within Star Trek. I think it's actually to the benefit of, you know, the writers having to kind of think creatively there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I mean, and that's what inspired Star Trek right from day one, was like, what can we work with that will impress people? Because we don't necessarily, you know, we can't put 2001 A Space Odyssey up on the small screen.
Yeah. So Cam, would you fail spacewalking class if you were in the Academy?
Excellent question. I have a thing about heights, but I don't think that spacewalking would have any impact on me. And I did enjoy scuba diving. So I'm going to say that I would probably be okay with spacewalking. I think I would put in the practice on that one.
I was not expecting that answer from you.
My whole thing is, I don't want to go to space in like a rocket ship. That looks absolutely nightmarish to me. But the idea of doing an actual spacewalk, I mean, I have skydived. So I guess, you know what, after I've done that, why not spacewalk?
Okay, no, I forgot about that. So let's say somebody gave you a sleeping pill and you went to sleep at the base of a rocket ship and you woke up in the middle of the outer space. Would you still take that opportunity to go to space?
Oh, right. Yeah, so I don't even have to experience like any of the travel aspect. Ooh,
correct.
That is more tempting. You know what? You may have me there. Like, or, you know, you could say like in a Star Trek future, if I can just beam to space, that's very different as well. Yeah, it's, to me, it's literally just that being strapped to that rocket, like shaking like out of my chair. And that just looks nightmarish. Like, no, thank you.
I still like how you envision the 24th century as so reliant on rocket ships.
Well, I'm thinking of now. If I'm going up in a rocket ship now, like, there's no way you could get me into one at this moment. In the 24th century, whole other thing. If you're getting me to, like, take off in the Enterprise, that's okay. I could totally deal with that.
Okay. You're not the Agnes Girardi I originally pegged you for.
Right. I mean, I would probably be a little nervous. It might be a little bit like Hoshi or something like that. But, I think I would just take some time to settle down. I don't know that a lot of what they show in terms of Star Trek space travel would phase me. Maybe if I'm looking at like Burnham doing that, like whatever it was, like her space jump she did in the premiere of Discovery. That one, maybe not so much. Or, you know what? Also, those pods in Brother, the premiere of season 2 Discovery. No way. No way am I going through an asteroid field in those.
I can't blame you for that. I'm surprised that you did not drop the reference to Such Sweet Sorrow Part 2, in which Burnham is just floating in this kind of space-time continuum with flashing lights for about 45 minutes.
Yeah, that one doesn't seem so appealing either.
No.
Although, if I can fly through space and have like an escort of pods like swirling around me, I might be willing to go for it then.
Okay. Gotta ask you, what is so bad about Starbase 80?
I don't know. I thought that was pretty funny, though, to have that in-joke of constantly referencing Starbase 80. And I gotta say, I felt really bad for Dr. Tana in this situation.
She just wants to enjoy her nachos.
This poor doctor, who's probably just worked like a long shift, is trying to eat nachos and gets her face like slammed into them. I mean, I can see a situation where I would be on Mariner's side. Maybe she just got like bumped into them a little. Face down straight into nachos. I think all of us would be infuriated by that.
Well, it's also Fletcher comes up and he says, "Here's a warm towel." I'm like, I don't know. It's a warm towel is not what I need. I need like those chicken finger wipes or those chicken wing wipes that you get after getting sloppy with those.
Yeah, totally. Like, I'm trying to think, what do you get a warm towel for?
Maybe like for like going to sleep on an airplane.
Maybe, yeah, or I think maybe some salons might give you a warm towel, but I don't think of warm towels when it comes to like being covered in like nacho cheese.
No, not.
maybe also, a wet towel would be preferable. Yeah.
Also, if I was a senior officer and I look across a bar and the ensigns are chugging melon puree direct out of the replicator, My patience for these folks would already be at its limit.
Okay, so Dr. Tana is considered this kind of curmudgeon-y character on the show. In past episodes, that's the way she's been presented. In this case, I'm thinking of Dr. Tana quietly eating her nachos while all this chaos is going on. She's a lot more laid back than a lot of other Star Trek characters would be.
Maybe she just wanted to be invited to the puree chugging contest.
Maybe. I would love to see
and
that.
She never got the invite to the choo-choo party either.
I thought Dr. Tana was pretty great in this episode. That's a character I want to see more of. I think they're sticking maybe at least for now for the small doses. Like, this character is really funny in small doses, but I do hope we get a little bit more considering Tandy is supposed to be in the medical bay.
Yeah, well, we haven't seen her in there for quite some time, but speaking of small doses, yeah, we spent a lot of time up with the bridge crew, and I did like the stuff about Shax just begging Freeman to let him fire at the opposing ship. Freeman, we had this discussion a couple weeks ago about just how competent she is. She pretty much lets her own ship get disabled to the point where they're going to have to like launch escape pods out of it just because she insisted on not firing back at an attacking ship. Is this not just a little bizarre for a Starfleet captain?
It's a little strange because I feel like this is Lower Decks. These are not the major missions that Picard or Kirk or Janeway were going on. These are fairly minor, you know, skirmishes and disputes and diplomatic missions. And why is this character struggling so much with fairly basic missions?
Maybe that's why they're sending her to space trash yards to collect Starfleet garbage.
Maybe. I mean, that's quite possible. I mean, most of this team of, you know, senior officers seems kind of hopeless. Number one seems like an idiot. You know, the fact like he's just like running and crashing in at the start of the episode when they're making the warp core noises. You're like, okay, this is not the best and the brightest of Starfleet right here. I don't know what to make of that Paul Scheer character who has one line of dialogue, maybe two per episode. Like, I don't know. I don't know.
What is his most distinguishing characteristic?
He has none.
Yeah.
And I did love the Shaxx opening this episode, like giving the, you know, security officer's log or whatever. I actually thought that was really funny to have a security character who just wants to, you know, engage in battle, complaining about diplomatic approaches in the actual log at the start of the episode.
Yeah. No, it is. But we do appreciate that they are kind of, I wouldn't say offering more layers, but they're giving at least more screen time to develop, you know, the character's traits. I can easily describe, you know, say Ransom or Shaxx or Freeman, but based on their personality. But the chief engineer, Paul Scheer's character, the fact is I don't remember what his name is at this point.
I was blanking on it when I was talking about him a second ago, which is why I did not say it. Is it Billup or something like that?
That sounds about right, but yeah. I'm not going to bet any gold press Latinum.
Yeah, it's just like, why cast Paul Scheer for a character who says like one thing? It's very strange because he's not throwing out punchlines either.
I'm a little confused, and I could be getting my timeline mixed up, but I thought what happened though is like a couple weeks ago before Lower Decks even premiered, Paul Scheer had said on Twitter that he was interested in being in like the show as a voice. And then Mike McMahon, the creator, said, consider it done. We'll have you on season two. And again, I could be totally getting things mixed up, and that's why it doesn't quite make sense. So there might be listeners that know the Twitter exchange that I'm talking about that could correct me. But the thing is, instead, it looks as if Paul Scheer is already popping up on season one. And I wonder if they just kind of, it wasn't working with whatever original voice actor. They just cut the few lines of dialogue that existed and got Paul Scheer to come in for an hour and just record, you know, I don't know, 25 lines.
And maybe like a promise of we'll do more with this character next season or something.
Yeah, that's what I could guess. Cause it just is out of all the senior officers, he is far and away the least developed.
And it's interesting because Paul Scheer is developing a Galaxy Quest TV show.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So like, yeah, I'm just curious if there's going to, if that show's still happening or what, or if he's just,
as far as I know, it is. Yeah.
So yeah, I guess he says a foot in both worlds, I guess. That's kind of fun.
Speaking of Galaxy Quest, the director of that movie just released Bill and Ted Face the Music. Have you been able to catch that yet?
I haven't yet, no. I will watch it at some point when the price drops a bit.
Yeah. My quick review. Yeah. Wait till the price drops. That's all I'll say.
Yeah. It'll go down to like $6.99 in about a month or so. So that's when I'm going to jump on board.
Okay, cool. We need like a legit time travel episode, I think, for Lower Decks. Do you think we'll get one before the end of the season?
I think you have to. You know, they're going to hit on these Star Trek stories we've seen a billion times. And this week, holodeck characters, which obviously we've seen 1,000 holodeck malfunction episodes. And so I think you have to do time travel. Time travel, I guess, I'm trying to think. Like, for the most part, time travel on Star Trek tends to be fairly big events. There's not a lot of episodes that are just kind of tossed off time travel episodes, are there?
I'm trying to think about the most innocuous, not innocuous, but the ones that are not, as you say, kind of monumental events. Children of Time, I would make the argument for that.
Yeah.
E-Squared from Enterprise, perhaps. Not. I mean, the two episodes I just named, they're both great episodes, but they weren't built up into these epic adventures that, you know, you're supposed to be watching with everybody at the same time.
Yeah, I think of it's Return to Tomorrow from the original series where the fighter pilot winds up on the Enterprise.
Yeah, I was disappointed to hear that none of their predictions for space travel in the 20th century really came to fruition. We were supposed to be at Jupiter long ago, based on what their historical records told us in that episode.
Yeah, no kidding, no kidding. Well, next year or something, right?
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, yeah. You can be passenger zero, Cam. Take that SpaceX rocket ship right out to Jupiter.
It's like I win a contest without knowing exactly what the prize is.
Yeah. One other little thing. I keep going back to Badgie. I guess I'm just obsessed with, like, there's got to be, like, a fan set pin that they're going to make of Badgie. There's got to be somebody doing, like, Badgie cosplay at the next convention. But I just appreciate that he even had, like, little Mickey Mouse kind of gloves on him. As mm-hmm. Like, I wonder if he was depicted as, like, in a live action show. Let's say that, you know, Picard had a Badgie character, Star Trek Picard, I should say. He would have to be rendered like CG, you know. I wonder if it'd just be too cute looking for a live action series. I think we would both agree, like, it would, the animated series lends itself to doing these more wild ideas, but I just wonder if it works just that much better having it in kind of this 2D style animation.
Well, you know what? There was an opportunity to work Badgie into Picard, really. And that would have been in Stardust City Rag, where you had those advertisements popping up. I feel like that sort of avenue would work really well to give that character a cameo.
Is he advertising training modules, or is he advertising homicide?
I'm guessing the former. You could definitely do something down on Earth where you have, even if they're just like at Starfleet headquarters and there's like a hologram turning of Badgie. I think you could do something like that.
Be kind of funny.
You could totally turn it into an Easter egg in the Kurtzman verse going forward. Like, there's going to be countless opportunities to do that. We'll just see if they decide to run with it. I think this character, you said it, you know, I could totally see people dressing up as, you know, as that character for cosplay. I could see pins. I can see merchandise. It just seems like a really fun concept and a, you know, it's a very simple design. As we were saying, you know, last week or something, like, kids could draw Badgie. I think it works.
Yeah. One other thing that worked for me, the Tribble keychain after Mariner got the keys to the captain's yacht.
The captain's yacht. Yeah, that was pretty funny too. Again, that's part of what I like about the friendship between Boimler and Mariner, is just that they get along until they don't, until Mariner goes a little too edgy for Boimler. And I thought that was a really good tag on the episode. I did have a question though. One thing, going just back to Badgie for a second, what did you think of Jack McBrayer as the voice?
I thought he was perfect for Badgie. He, like, for those that might not recall, he played Kenneth the Page on 30 Rock. Even on that show, he's just like this wild out there kind of character, one that you're not even sure should exist in our reality. So that was like another voice that I recognized right away when I was watching this, in addition to J.G. Hertzler.
He very much specializes in, like, gentle, sort of whimsical characters who are borderline insane.
Yes, yes. As do you. You've been doing a podcast with me for, what, 5-6 years now?
That's right, yeah. He's an actor who has done a fair amount of animation in the years after 30 Rock. He's in the Wreck-It Ralph films as well. I wonder if we see him a lot in live action, or if he's just one of those actors that lends himself so well to animation.
I think I've seen him in like one or two Judd Apatow movies, but beyond 30 Rock, I just really haven't seen him much live action. And I think you're kind of, you know, pinpointing what it is. It's just like, he's got one of those voices that lends itself to this kind of work. And to me, it fits in well with Lower Decks. I can't imagine him showing up on Star Trek Picard, although I would watch that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would totally watch that. Yeah.
Would he play a Klingon? It'd be amazing if Jack McBrayer is playing a Klingon in Star Trek Picard.
He's Alexander.
I'd love it, yes.
What did you think of our first real encounter with the Delta Shift?
Yeah, they had been name-dropped in the last few weeks. I do like how they have their own little universe, though. It always kind of irks me when you find shows that, you know how, okay, everybody at Central Perk just gave up the seats to the Friends crew, you know, like everybody would have to sit around these crummy chairs and let, you know, Ross, Rachel and company have the couches. I like it when TV shows acknowledge that there are other pockets of these large universes that exist.
That was something I always struggled with on TNG, for example, or any of the other shows, really. We would see the Night Shift, like, occasionally, where you saw Beverly Crusher running it, for example, but we never had a good idea as to what was actually going on those nights where, say, Crusher's not there, when our main characters aren't there.
I still like how they had to turn the lights down, you know, just to remind them, oh yeah, you losers, you're on Night Shift.
Was that cruel?
It seemed really pointless. What did it accomplish?
Yeah, because, you know, as someone who has worked graveyard shifts in their life, they're not the most pleasant. And in a world like Star Trek, the graveyard shift doesn't really exist, which is kind of great. You could work any time of day and it doesn't really matter. So, like, why are you putting on mood lighting when the people come on for what is the night shift?
I've got a great graveyard shift story for you, but, you know, 10, 12 years ago, I was working overseas and we had to do graveyard shifts so that we could line up with North American time zones. And we were in a tropical country. So during my break, I went across the street to the McDonald's to get an ice cream for me and my coworker. And the entire ice cream melted by the time that I got back across the street to our office. And this is on graveyards. The sun is not even up. Like, that's how humid it was at the time.
That's brutal. Yeah, it's funny. Yeah. You were getting ice cream. And for me, when I was doing graveyards, it was waffles every day after work.
One last little thing that I just want to point out here, but I did like the mention, you're talking about the Delta crew. The one guy complaining that, you know, are you guys the ones that never bother to wipe down your diagnostic panel? I would be pissed off if it was me having to like deal with somebody's like smudge marks that they would never get rid of if it's my turn to take over from them.
Especially right now.
Yeah, no kidding. Ugh. I'd have Lysol wipes like holstered like in my belt at that point, you know, if I was on a starship dealing with COVID.
One reference that I kind of enjoyed was Rutherford talking about there being like a frozen princess a cryo frozen princess in the like wreckage. And I'm pretty sure that was a Precious Cargo reference from Enterprise, which is an episode. You know what? I know I probably shouldn't like these things, but if they are going to reference episodes that we would never, ever reference in any other Star Trek show, please have at it. I just think that's hilarious.
Like, there is no way that they're ever referencing Ronan the Candle on, say, Star Trek Picard or Discovery or Strange New Worlds, but I can totally picture them referencing the green candle that Beverly Crusher fell in love with in Sub Rosa sometime in Lower Decks.
Exactly. Like, that's what I want to see more of, is those types of references just to entertain me. You know, I mean, I really did enjoy, too, a handful of episodes ago, the Battle for the Planet of the Apes reference. Like, that was fun, too. The Lethal Weapon one in this episode, I was kind of like, okay, I don't know. That one really makes much sense. But I'm okay with the outside the box references.
Oh, one last thing. The writer of this episode, one John Cochran, he is actually a winner from the reality TV show Survivor. So you and I were fans of that show, and we met up with him at the convention in 2019 in Las Vegas. He was there with his writing staff on Lower Decks, and couldn't have been a nicer guy. You and I chatted with him for a little bit separately, and then I said that, oh yeah, I'm here with my friend. He loves Survivor too. And then he said to me, who's your friend? Cam Smith. He's just like, I just spoke to Cam a few minutes ago. And I was like, in my head is like, I know Cam told me where I could find you, but I didn't tell him that.
Well, and also you probably asked all the exact same questions I did.
Yes. Is Jeff Probst really as hunky in real life as he is on the show?
He's like, even more so. We're like fanning ourselves.
Well, I did have a fainting couch right next to me, thankfully. So
so just as before we sign off here, we should touch on Star Trek Day a couple days ago at the time of this recording, where we had panels all day running and the debut of the latest Star Trek Discovery trailer. Was there anything that popped out that excited you about this day?
No, because these sorts of things, it's just, it's actors saying generic things, you know? So, but I did like the trailer for Discovery Season 3. I'm surprised, you know, they're dropping it with only a month to go. I thought they would have wanted to kind of build it up somewhat more over the summer. And my only regret is that there's moments in the trailer that I wish I just saved for myself to see them appear on screen as they happen. But any big takeaways from you, sir?
Yeah, the Discovery trailer looks fantastic. I mean, I can't wait. My only little concern there is that, I mean, again, they're only really marketing probably the first two or three episodes or something, but I hope we do get some different types of stories within the season, you know, like your magic to make the sanest man go mad in season one.
Yeah,
I would like to see more things like that. So that's the only little concern, but it looks fantastic. And I can't wait to see this whole idea of reestablishing the Federation. It's something that's been flirted with in the past in various attempts at getting the franchise going. And I think it's a really good idea, and hopefully it's done well. The one panel I did watch that was, I mean, it wasn't rich with insight, but I watched the Strange New Worlds panel. And I will say the one thing that kind of got my ears up a little bit was Rebecca Romijn talking about the character of Number One going into the series, and that the backstory was something that she was very fixated on bringing into the show for that character. And it's always been a very mysterious character, and saying that what they came up with was really, really fantastic and completely outside of what she would have expected. And just as someone who, you know, loved the original series and has watched The Cage a lot of times, just seeing more of that character and a maybe richer backstory had me excited.
Yeah. The other thing that maybe made me think, though, is she was talking about how the timeline about when they found out that they're going to be doing a Strange New World series. She said it was about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, that may not surprise me, but I just remember Anson Mount being very, very aloof at the convention about the prospect of doing a spinoff. Also in like any sort of interviews. To me, I originally just thought it was some sort of tactic that you do with contract negotiations to make things, you know, work out the way that you want. But he would have had to be on board with this idea pretty wholeheartedly if they're already saying like, yeah, we like this, we're going to go forward with it, the fan response is there, if this was about a year ago.
Yeah, I think it just probably had to do with scheduling, right? Of them figuring out when they would put this show out or put it into production.
Yeah, because also Ethan Peck, he had signed on for like a role on, I don't know, some cable sci-fi show. And the question was whether it was going to be a recurring role or a regular series role. So that kind of threw some question marks up in the air. So yeah, the scheduling may have brought on a lot of other things that they had to figure out the logistics for.
Yeah, and that show, I believe, was Penny Dreadful, City of Angels, I think it was. And that show's been canceled, so no worries there, I guess.
There you go.
Yeah, so I will say this about Star Trek Day. I mean, I'm glad they did it. I think it's really awesome that they continue to try to engage with the fans and put this stuff out there, because, you know, Star Trek, when it was running through just the film era, or not the film era, but the films recently, the JJ films, when you were doing like Beyond, they really didn't engage with fans at all, even though it's the 50th anniversary.
That was bizarre.
It was bizarre and really dumb. And I like that the Kurtzman era, while, you know, a lot of fans are very vocal about their anger towards it, the Kurtzman era has been tireless in trying to put things out there for the fans, engage with the fans, keep them involved in the show. And I think that's a really good thing, because when you tie it back to, you know, the origins of the, you know, the big Star Trek conventions in the 70s and onwards, that's always been a big part of Star Trek. And it's nice to see that sort of torch being carried on versus lock it all down, guys. We don't let anything out, like, say, Lucasfilm does.
Yeah. No, it's new era of fandom. I think this is the smart way for them to go.
I do have one question for you, though. What day is Star Trek Day? Because often fans have celebrated it on First Contact Day. And now it's on September 8th, which is the debut of the Mantrap, and that's totally cool. But what exactly is Star Trek Day?
I think it should be First Contact Day. I think, what is that, April 6th? If this is off the top of my head, but so I could be mistaken. But I always thought that that kind of made more sense. It doesn't quite have like the same kind of coolness vibe as May the 4th, you know, for Star Wars. But what's your takeaway?
I would probably go First Contact. The only thing is, it's something that, like, as you said, does not jump out to people. the way that, you know, May the 4th does. I don't know that Star Trek has that real... I don't know if there's a day that I could, though, pick for Star Trek that the average person's going to be like, oh, of course.
I know September 8th is, you know, when The Man Trap premiered. I can't, and I think I only know that for certainty because we just had Star Trek Day. But that's why I'm not 100% sure if April 6th is First Contact Day.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll find out if they schedule a whole bunch of things on in April for First Contact Day.
I don't think that'll happen, but yeah, we'll see.
Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to the Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. Tyler, what are we doing next week?
Well, it's going to be episode 7, and well, we don't have an episode title just yet as we record on Thursday, but yeah, I'm looking forward to it, Cam.
Awesome. Okay, and of course, find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam, V is in very cheesy nachos, Smith.
And you can find me at Reportin, that's R-A-P-O-R-T, T as in tractor beam fight, O-N.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed. Check it, check it, check it, check it. Check it, check it, check it, check it. All aboard the choo-choo train. All aboard the choo-choo train. All aboard the choo-choo train. All aboard, all aboard. Choo-choo! All aboard, all aboard. Coming down the track, clickety-clack. Coming down the track, clickety-clack, clack. Coming down the track, clickety-clack, clickety-clack, clickety-clack. Chugga-chugga-choo, chugga-chugga-choo-choo. Transfer complete.